Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sensi, host Jake Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Stenzi, I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
You know, I am always making it happen. Giddy about today, because today's guest is co-owner and CEO of Sovereign Ammo. I was just out at the land this weekend doing some things. We can talk about that. She is an award-winning business leader and best-selling author, passionate about helping sovereignty, and is proud to help others keep their family rights intact. So, without further ado, Laura DiBenedetto, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. It's great to be with you guys.
It is. So let's get to know each other a little bit. Tell us about your journey. Where did you get started? How did you grow through business? And where are you at now?
Once upon a time, I was a sperm.
And you're fighting for life. You're fighting for life.
If you can remember that,
you know, you killed your brothers and sisters and you got to the top. So
listen, y'all, the point and the takeaway. Literally, I have been a winner since day one.
I came out the gates winning.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so being a cheeky so-and-so aside, I started my professional career when I was 19. I thought that having fun was for suckers, so I just thought, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur because I'll have loads of time and money. That's hilarious. You should see my stand-up comedy tour. I'm just kidding. So I had an interesting start to my life. I started a marketing company when I was 19 years old. And this is after a series of jobs that I got fired from and or quit from. And I was like, I don't think having a J-O-B is meant for me. I think I need to own the company. So I'm going to do that. So I still have this marketing company 25 years later. Oh, my God, I feel very old. And I ended up retiring from that in 2018. And it was awesome. It was great. Loved it. Except I was a burnt out, very, very grumpy lady. And I was really being like wicked mean to people. And
sounds
turns
scary.
Out that's, oh my God, I was the dragon lady. I sucked to be around. My employees hated me. They're like, oh my God, you're retiring. Bye. I'm like, wait, what? Where's the balloons? They're like, no, you can go now. So I just had a lot of time, like after I retired, just like thinking like, wow, nobody likes me. I have no friends. I'm really miserable. My new marriage is already going to crap. So I ended up doing this massive project because that's what entrepreneurs do. We're like, hey, I'm not going to just read a book on this. No, I'm going to go down the rabbit hole. So I started learning about human behavior and figuring out what does it take to actually be happy. Turns out I had been way off the whole time. And I did a whole behavioral experiment with myself, basically around the idea, what if I intentionally created new thought patterns by way of habit, could I be happier? There's a book out there called The Six Habits. So spoiler alert, yes, I was very successful in my mission. And then I published my book and I was about ready to go on a speaking tour. And then COVID was like, you thought. No. So I've been selling my book online, having a lot of great success with that, doing tons of podcasts. And then my husband and I moved to Florida. And my husband, former military, one of those crazy bastards that intentionally jumped out of perfectly good airplanes, decided to move us here to Florida and want to start an ammo company. He's like, hey, you got a business background. I don't. You want to be my business partner? Sure. So now I'm the CEO of a marketing company, CEO of an ammo company, author, TEDx speaker, all the things. And I'm allergic to sitting still. That's the story.
Laura. My first question is, by the way, Jake said giddy, so that's you can't get any better on the show. That word giddy, Jake. Let me ask you, from 19 to 40-something years old, why did you become the person you became? Because you don't become grumpy over a span of time. What made you become an unhappy, miserable person to be around?
I had defined happiness incorrectly and I had bought into the whole like American BS and the whole what you would now think of as like the social media imaging and like modeling. But a lot of it was like Hollywood before that. You know, keep in mind, I grew up before cell phones were a thing. So there was a lot of societal modeling and a lot of...
What is societal modeling?
You see things in culture, you see your family, you see people's financial head trash on display within your family and just around other people and culturally, you basically get this idea that to be a successful human, you must have loads of money and you must trade your precious minutes given to you here on Earth in exchange for these little pieces of paper so you can have more stuff and keep up with the Joneses. It's all a gigantic lie. And it's, you know, when they call, you know, the big they in the sky, call us the American consumer. Damn, that grinds my gears. That's all they see us as, is the consumers. We're just these machines of consumptions there for other people. And I turned that on its head. And before I did that, I was miserable because I was bought in. I was going after the stuff. I had the designer handbags. I had the nicest of everything. I didn't have good health. I didn't have anything, but I had the good optics. You know what I mean?
You had
I won
legs.
All the awards.
Here's the thing with this stuff that I think is so true. I don't know what the number is, if it's 200,000, if it's 400,000, whatever it is. If you get to that level, but you don't compete with the Joneses, you can have the same life pretty much as probably Jeff Bezos, right? Like, obviously, he gets to fly private. He gets to do all this stuff. But you're living like 98% better than everybody in the history of humanity. Like, you may have to fly commercial, but you could still go to Hawaii or whatever. But if you don't compete for having the $400,000 car, the 12,000 square foot house, if you have good, basic good, and you don't overspend, you've already made it. You have arrived. But I see so many people around me that I interact with on a daily basis that are at that level that are fucking miserable because they're competing for, I got to have the Gucci, I got to have the $400,000 car. And then they're competing. It's like, take a step back. Be okay with the Honda minivan, maybe, okay? Be okay not having a mortgage or paying it down and enjoying what you have. Maybe it sounds weak or whatever, but I think a lot of people would be happier if they didn't go to the nth degree because, you know, they got the minivan, now they need the whatever. I just think it's they push it too far when they're in a pretty damn good spot and they can enjoy life more.
Jake, they know to push it far because of your neurochemistry. Your serotonin's telling you that Parkinson's law is real. I make more money. I need to spend more money. It's really about the chemicals going on in your brain. You start feeling good. You start getting addicted to spending money when you don't understand that you have that awareness. You're not aware
social
that you're even doing
gasoline
it.
Social media is gasoline on this shit too.
Oh, and that's what they're doing. Exactly. So they're adding other different layers and they're hitting the dopamine. Dopamine. Oh, I've got another car. I've got another bag. But when, I guess Laura understood, and a lot of us that have seen that, understand that there's awareness to it going, well, why do I keep doing this and getting the same results? How do I break that pattern? And unless and until you become aware of that, you will not see Jake's logic. You're speaking logically. I mean, we're talking emotionally here, and we're talking really
camo cargos and flip-flops, baby. All right.
Yeah, I live in flip-flops, you guys.
Yes, I do. Listen, happiness. Just define happiness for me. What does happiness mean to you?
Well, happiness means to me being content with what I have, who I am, where I am in life, and not comparing it to tomorrow me or somebody else or some fat ass on the Kardashians or whatever. Like, I'm not trying
to... You mean
to
like a Botox ass, like a fat fake ass, right?
I don't know, man.
But I heard that's like, going by that the wayside. Really that weird. Might not even be like... I think that's going out of style.
I don't know, but
I think they're
like,
pulling the butt cheeks out. Literally.
What I'd like to understand is how any ass at all can be a stylistic choice. It's like your ass is your ass. I'm just saying, like, you got what you got.
That's not true. I think it's called the BBL.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, I go to the gym and there's like a lot of interesting fashion choices. We're just going to leave it at that. But, you know, I think the idea of... you know, happiness is honestly the ability to say no and feel really good about it. Think about it. Like, I don't need Botox
Cheers
in my
to
face.
That.
I'm good with actually getting some wrinkles. It's cool. I don't dye my hair. Like, I mean, granted, I don't have a lot of gray hairs, but I got some. Am I going to dye my hair? No. Am I going to go to that party where I know I'm going to feel like crap and somebody's going to be giving me stink eye because I'm prettier than them or whatever, you know, like my husband is like not social and I'm not social or I just want to hang out with the cat? No, don't feel like going. Like, people have really bad FOMO, fear of missing out. I've got the JOMO, the joy of missing out. Y'all do what you're going to do over there. You can stab up your faces and carve up your body parts. And I like me the way I am. And I am going to work and I am going to punch out, and I'm going to be satisfied with the amount of things I have. I have a beautiful home. I live in a middle-class neighborhood in a middle-class home. I've got two kitties and a comfortable-sized house, and I have what I need. I bought my car in 2015, and I'm going to drive that thing till the wheels fall off. Like, why are we victims of this more mentality? It's bull. So I'm, you know, like, I care deeply about the subject of sovereignty, which is the through line between my marketing company, my book, and my ammo company. It's sovereignty in all different ways, different flavors. But like, I crave freedom from myself, but freedom from the trappings of a society that wants to keep me trapped in a consumeristic box, trapped in fear, trapped in propaganda, trapped in this illusion that I am not enough. Bull. Yes, I am. I'm enough. You're enough. You don't need more. You're good. You woke up the side of the dirt today. Aren't you blessed?
Hey, I got to challenge you for a second. This may end the show and you may hate me forever, but how could you hold these beliefs and run a marketing company at the same time? They're like so like...
That's legit.
They're polar opposites though at the end of the day.
They're not.
It depends on your marketing, but...
No, they're not, because what we do is, first of all, we don't do influencer marketing, which I think has its challenges, and there's different types of marketing. We do small business brick and mortar marketing, so we help a lot of executives who have started their company maybe 10 to 20 years ago. They've built it up to about $10 to $50 million in size. They've usually built it up based on their own sales acumen. And as they're starting to get more established in their career and the company's doing really well, they get to a point of exhaustion. And they're like, I can't keep doing this or I'm going to die. You're right. You need some marketing to replace you, because you'll never find a salesperson who can sell like this. So let us figure out how to brand your company effectively, how to speak your avatar's love languages, which is ideal customer profile for those who don't know what an avatar is. And when you do that and you know, you create an ecosystem of pure avatar love and genuine customer magnetism, it's not BS. And the sovereignty that I'm giving to my client is I'm giving them their time back, and I'm giving them more money to invest in their children's education, taking their kids, you know, on like family adventures, and in really investing what matters most to them. Like, listen, my clients already have enough money. That's not why they hire us. My clients hire my marketing company because they're desperate for the one thing they haven't been able to get from any other marketing company, and that's time and freedom. Mm-hmm. We do that by understanding what they really want.
I guess it was a softball question, Gina. I guess she just smashed it. She said that was a softball.
Stump me.
What you got?
Do it.
What you got?
We can play stump, Laura. It's fine.
I want to stay on this happiness for a second, because is it true? What are your thoughts that everyone says we should be happy all the time? That's the pervasive thought in society right now. It's you have to be happy all the time.
You're entitled to that, Gino.
And I'm not happy right now. I was pissed off this morning.
You're
I was a little
so
grumpy
happy.
Yesterday.
You're glowing right
you're
now.
Happy
you're
right now.
Shit.
You're talking about me.
He can't even stop smiling.
I said this morning. I didn't say right now in the present. I said in the past. Let's discuss happiness. Like, is it not okay to not feel happy all the time? I mean, like, we're always thought you have to be having great days. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you said that you're going to be buying a copy of my book. So spoiler alert, this is addressed in the book. If you go to thesixhabits.com, you can get a copy for yourself. And in the book and in real life, my core belief is that you should aim for about 85 to 90% happy. And guess what? Life's going to happen. Folks are going to die. You know, someone's going to cut you off in traffic. Like, it's not about being this plastic, like, cyborg. It's not about that, because that's not authentic. And the thing is, emotions are information. Anger is a very useful tool. It is one of the most inspirational tools that we have. Sadness is deeply informational, and it is very motivating. There's so many emotions that are wonderful tools and rich textures to the human experience. If we never knew sadness, we wouldn't even know what the hell happiness was if it bit us in the face. So if you think about, should we be happy all the time? The answer is a resounding no. You have to A, have something to compare it to, but B, you don't want to be happy all the time, because you actually want to experience the melancholy of a rainy, crappy day and just feeling all your big, stupid feelings. Like, that's a good thing. That's why God gave us life, is to experience like the richness of the human experience and to like be in deep relationship with nature and with others. And I mean, humans are emotional creatures, and to like to deny that and live in this plastic culture, A, you're buying into social media toxic crap. B, it's unattainable. It's actually unattainable. Like even like the so-called happiest people in the world, they're not happy all the time. I'm not happy all the time. You know, I was screaming at somebody last week. Like it happens, you know, but it's like, you've got to be able to, you got to be able to, like, the whole point of being able to have all this personal development with, you know, books about happiness and sovereignty and all these different concepts is to help you to cruise through these moments better. So maybe you yell less, right? I yell a hell of a lot less than I used to. Now it's a very rare event. Now, when I'm sad, I can process my feelings better and I can actually articulate and verbalize. I am sad because, and you can articulate your needs. I really need comfort right now. And I can go to my husband, sweetie, I don't want to talk. I just really need to be held right now. Like I'm able to articulate, and because I'm very equipped with tools and my goal is to be an overall well-rounded, happier person, I have greater tools that support me in the other moments that will even help the sadness be a richer sadness and a more, I hate to say this, this is kind of strange, but even a more enjoyable sadness, because you can really just kind of snuggle down into it like a toad, you know, buries himself in the dirt. Like, all right, we sad now, let's do this, you know?
that is one of the smartest communication, we'll call it hacks to have with a man. If you can actually be very direct and tell him what you want and what you're thinking and mean it, it goes a long ways, because we're like, we look at women as creatures and try to guess a lot of times. And 99% of the time we're like way off. I have no effing clue what's going on. So keep doing more of that for all the ladies out there. Just be direct and tell us straight up, because the guessing stuff is very, very challenging.
Well, yeah. And, you know, to add to that, like if your husband asks you or your partner asks you, honey, what's wrong? Don't say nothing. Articulate.
No, but nothing means something.
And evenly. No, nothing is a lie.
But nothing, like, means clearly, something else, and we try to translate, and we're not very good at it.
I know. And like, don't do that.
So
like,
I hold up the Google Translator, and it always sends out the wrong shit. So.
Well, listen, men are very literal. I think it helps that I'm very literal as well. So if my husband's like, hey, don't call so-and-so, I won't call so-and-so, but it doesn't mean I won't call their coworker. Like, you got to be real clear with me. Like, I've always been around men and had to function in business as a man and all these other different things. But when a woman says, nothing, or is vague, or plays a game because she's afraid of being direct.
Or it doesn't matter. Bullshit.
It does. But it points to a woman's safety and her feeling that she can speak the truth, but also, and that's on the role of her partner, and that's the partner's responsibility. So men, create safety, make it okay to speak truth without you being reactive, and you get to not like the truth and you can still be a nice person about it. Like, my husband gives me information and I receive it, but it doesn't mean I need to react to it. I have the choice to take a beat, inhale, exhale, and choose to respond. And that's differently. And men need to do a better job at that. And women need to do a better job at articulating clearly without all the emotional stuff. This is what I need right now. And being very clear, because men, I love you guys. Like, this is who I coach when I'm doing my executive coaching. I work with men exclusively. When I work with men, like, they just want clear instructions. Just tell me what you want. Okay. Can do. You're so right.
Laura, let me ask you, when you started this personal development, and people may not even have started their journey yet, what did you do? Did you go to coaching school? Did you become a life coach? Did you work with couples that coach? Did you therapy? Where did you start?
I started by honestly doing so much research into the book. Here's the thing about marketing that will shock you exactly zero. Marketing is basically sociology. So I've been a sociologist for a very, very long time, and, you know, engaging in the study of human behavior and social patterns and understanding why people do what they do, understanding more about human behavior and the inner workings of the human mind became my obsession with the Six Habits and the thing that changed my life. And being able to dive into that, but also just having an intuitive and natural gift for it, is what allowed me to be a brilliant coach. Now, you know, you asked me about being a certified life coach. I have thoughts on that. None are terribly positive, so we're just going to bounce on by that. But I think that, if you have good lived experience and you have walked the path that someone wishes to walk and you are a good leader, you'll be able to take them there, especially if you understand how to break down the steps and make it so someone can follow you. And that is one of my gifts. There are people who haven't done there, and they're speaking and coaching and leading and teaching and whatever from more of a theoretical perspective. And that basically describes my entire collegiate experience.
Those who can't do teach.
Yeah, kind of. You know, in my case, you know, I've done a TEDx, so a lot of my clients will be like, hey, can you help me do a TEDx? Yep. I've published a book. Can you help me publish a book? Yes, I can. I want to retire early. I can help you do that. I've done that. Hey, how do you, change your marriage dramatically? Been there, done that. Like, how do you do all these different things? Like, the one thing I will never, ever do is teach from a theoretical standpoint or guessing. If I haven't personally done it, I'm not going to speak to it. Like, I'm going to be launching a course really soon on how to find success on LinkedIn. In a 12-month period of time, my content saw 7 million views and I pulled $750,000 of income off of the platform with consistent effort. And other people like, oh, I can't do that. LinkedIn sucks. No, your strategy sucks and your attitude sucks, but we can fix those things. So I'm launching a course about that. But like, I only teach from the been there, done that. And if I can't break it down to isolate what worked and why, I can't possibly replicate it for you. So that's the kind of coach I am.
Before we go to the short answers, give me a couple of the habits that you have in the book. Let's dive into them.
Sure. So my favorite lately is gratitude. So the 6 habits, I'm not going to give you all 6 because that's no fun. But gratitude is habit number 3. And it's one of those things where people don't really understand gratitude. They don't, you don't, I don't. Right. But to live the gratitude lifestyle, you change your perspective about literally everything. You wake up every day. Thank you for another day alive. And this gift of opening my eyes. It's just the simplest things that we take for granted. Thank you so much. Universe, God, whomever you thank, but it's not about you. You are not the ultimate deity, right? Like universe, God, whatever, spaceman, doesn't matter like what you believe in, but you need to be saying thank you to life. Thank you to other people. Thank you for the air in your lungs, an opportunity to love and be loved. And like, thank you for my hand and the ability to touch things and to experience the sensory pleasures of being a human and having a dog who loves me. And, you know, the idea of deep and broad gratitude is not something that's widely practiced. There's like this thing of, oh, say 10 little things that you're grateful for before you go to bed. Great. That's kid stuff. Talk about 10 things that suck in your life that you're grateful for. That's going hard. Like, I'm really grateful I was with someone who abused me when I was younger. Because it taught me so many valuable lessons about boundaries, about how to stand up for myself, about how to go for what I want. It removed a lot of fear for me. And I'm able to now serve others who've been abused and help to lift them up in ways I never could have done before. Talk about teaching from a place of experience. So we can practice deep and broad gratitude. The second habit that I would bring up would be acceptance, which is the second one. We don't love ourselves. We don't, and we really can. And it's really about choosing radical self-love where it's not like, that's it. I'm the bomb. I'm the best thing ever. No, it's not about that. That's ego. And that's just a mask for insecurity. But deep self-love is when you wake up, you look like dog crap. You don't feel particularly lovable, maybe, you know, and maybe you don't have a lot of money. You don't have all the nice stuff. Maybe you made some failures. You can still look in the mirror with sincerity and love in your heart and be like, you know what? I'm good. And you're not comparing yourself to anybody. And you get to say no. No to keeping up with the Joneses. No to stabbing up your face with the latest toxic crap. No to being a consumer. You just get to exist and be sovereign as a human being. And I think that's important. Like women in particular, they watch shows like The Real Housewives and this and that, and they compare themselves deeply. Like you comparisonitis and imposter syndrome. Like what would happen if you just loved the gift of the life you have and who you are as a person, what you look like, the choices you made, your failures and everything? Like what if you loved all of it the way your mother would love you?
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over 250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Wield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey. Multifamily.
All right, we're back. I'm going to stay on the no train here. How powerful is it to say no, or having the ability to tell anyone to F off? How has that impacted your life? Because there's something there. I know it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no is one of the most powerful words in the English language. When you say no to something, you have the opportunity to say yes to other things.
What about saying no to your ego?
Oh, that's hard. That's a very, very
That's
good
probably
question.
The biggest challenge that people have, though. If you can say no to the ego, try that on, folks, for size. Say no to the ego on the BS that you feel, because it's a jail. The ego puts you in jail.
Right.
For a lot of stupid shit. If you can learn to say no to the ego, you're breaking the chains. You're freeing yourself from the corporate slavery and the marketing that she discussed earlier in the episode. That's it.
Eckhart Tolle wrote A New Earth and a number of other amazing books, but he's a wonderful teacher to consider for just really sliding into being and saying no. Like, he doesn't directly say saying no. Like, he'll take an entire book to teach you to say no. But yeah, Jake, you're spot on with that.
I mean, that's real freedom there. If you can say no to things and then F off to others that try to push you the wrong way. We're keeping it kid friendly right now. All right, let's go back to your coaching. The, the avatar, cause I think I understand your coaching a little bit, but talk about, you mentioned men, talk about the avatar and what, you're like, and what and who you're typically serving. What is your coaching look like?
You know, it's really funny. My avatar for my marketing company, my coaching, and my ammunition company, they're all the same guy.
What's his name?
Bob.
Bobby! Bobby Axelrod in the house, right, Gino?
Bobby!
Gino's watching Billions right now, so.
I love Bobby. Big nice. Fan.
Well, the thing about having like the same avatar is I realize who I love to serve the most and who loves to work with me the most. And it's the same guy. And it's basically, I mean, I'm very, very crystal clear about who this is. It's a middle-aged, white, straight, conservative dad who believes in the Constitution, is either politically neutral or on the right. You know, someone who deeply believes in capitalism and the ability to be financially sovereign, wants to do something on their own, desires to be more self-sufficient. I mean, think about it. This person generally wants to start a business or already has. This person wants to be the master of self and be able to say no to being a consumer and being trapped in the propaganda, right? That's where the book comes in. And this person obviously appreciates constitutional sovereignty. My clients do tend to have expensive hobbies that go boom. So that's where the ammo company comes in. So that's fun. Hey, you want to blow up a watermelon? Yes. You and me, Bob, let's do it. Boom.
She's either serving the founding fathers or what they call modern day radicals, Gino. I don't know. I can't tell the difference anymore.
Modern day radicals. That's offensive.
It was meant to be. any tips for, you know, people that are maybe they're $10 to $15 million into their business growth? Marketing is elusive as a mother. It is.
Can be.
It confuses the shit out of Gino and myself. How do people start to gain traction with it? Because it's just this wide open highway with no direction. And then you have these consultants that come in and try to help you. And I don't think they know what the hell they're talking about 99% of the time. Like, where does a person get real traction to start a framework to begin marketing in an effective way? And maybe that's too broad of a question and no one knows the answer to. But we'll play the game here. Go ahead.
Well, Of course, my first answer to that is how much time do you have? Yeah. Because it is a broad question with a broad answer.
I hate it. I'm sorry.
This is my world. I don't hate it, but I can see why you do.
Yeah.
What I hate more is the fact that like the tools that we as marketers use change every Thursday at the whims of Zuckerberg and all these other clowns that are running the show. So there's that, but I won't gripe about that. But the way to create marketing success is to become abundantly crystal clear. Clarity is your pathway. And you're probably thinking, well, clarity on what? What problem are you solving and for whom and why? What problem are you solving for whom and why? Right. So if you think about, let's pick on my ammunition company, right? So that one's newer to me than the marketing company in the book. Right? The problem that I solve, it's not ammunition because you can buy that from anybody. The problem I solve with my ammunition company is to create a sense of community, give my avatar his voice back, give him a sense of cohesion and unity with like-minded people so he's not so alone anymore, and give him more of his sovereignty. My avatar wants that, right? So I already told you who my avatar is. It's Bob. We love Bob. Bob's my bro, right? And then why? Because Bob is pissed off. Bob needs a friend. Bob is tired of being crapped on by the Amazons of the world and not cared about and not loved. Bob is tired of being told, oh, toxic masculinity. No, Bob is sick of that. Bob wants to be a man with all the chest hair and all his glory and live his life and be the man of his house and not be disrespected for it. He wants to raise good kids. He wants to have a community of people who think like him. He's got old-fashioned values. So you've got the what, you've got the whom, and you've got the why. When you know all those three things, you get abundantly clear.
What'd you say, Jake?
Ammo, actually.
No, but it's like, no, I don't mean that in a bad way, but that is Black Rifle Coffee. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's very similar in a way, right? That to the avatar.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah. I mean, you know, their company is a wonderful exercise in clarity, right? And if you think about what they're doing,
and I mean that
right, they're creating that
anyway.
Unity. No, I know. That's why I grin big. I know you're joking. It's cool. I love it. And it's a great example. It's a really good one. Yeah. There's a lot of wonderful examples. Warrior Poet Society also does a really great job with it too. So there's a lot of wonderful examples out there of profound clarity of message. I mean, even like Starbucks, right? They don't solve a coffee problem. You know what? No, that's not the problem they solve. It's I need something trendy as a status symbol and something that makes me feel good about myself for purchasing it. And I need to fit in with this particular crowd. And I know who their avatar is. It's mostly people leaning on the left who are looking for a unified thought and to have that cohesive movement, right?
A $5 dopamine hit.
Well, yeah, or six, depending how much foam you want in there. But yeah.
Oh, shit.
So, you know, when you really intimately understand what you're doing, for whom, and why, that's when you can build strong, cohesive messages that speak directly to what the avatar is really going through. I remember this in sales training. The problem your buyer presents you with, gentlemen, you're in real estate, you know this. The problem your buyer presents you with is rarely the real problem. Your job as a consultative salesperson is to get to the real problem, right? And I learned this in marketing years ago. Oh, I need Facebook advertising. No, you don't. Nobody ever says that. No, you don't. You think that because some other company is on there that you need that. What do you really need? You need leads? Great. Let's go beneath that. What you need is more financial security at home because your family needs greater things and your kids are about to go off to school. That's what you really need. Great. So let's tap into this and let's work backwards to fill your marketing plan with only things that will directly result in that goal being met. So when you like, I realize I'm kind of all over the place here. Hopefully you can keep up with my meandering thoughts here. But when you understand why someone wants to do something, why they want to buy from you, why they would buy from your competitor, when they would buy, like what critical intersecting moment in their life would cause them to purchase from you.
It's like the 95-5 thing, right?
There's a lot of those rules. Which one are you referring to?
No, it's like 95% of the customers are not in the market, 5% are, and then like, you know, it's, you know, or it's like 20% are, but it's like 5% in that quarter that they actually are. I was reading about it or something this morning. It's just, it's the, you said the word intersection. So it's like, when the person's actually ready to buy, are you going to be there to catch them? And that's the hard part, I think, about marketing, is that I think it's something like 95% of customers are not actually, you know, in the market at the time. And then it's like capturing them when they're actually ready to buy. That's the hard part of finding the intersection with the potential customer.
Yeah. But the trick to that, and I just launched my own podcast with my business partner at Envision Advertising called Envisioning Success. And we just talked about this. I think it was like episode 12 or whatever. You don't aim to intersect with them when they need you. You aim to intersect with them way beforehand.
I got this. Ready? This is what it says. So that means that only 20% of the buyers are in the market over the course of an entire year. Something like 5% in a given quarter, or put another way, 95% aren't in the market. So your advertising needs to be better at building brand relevant memories. Your brand becomes more competitive because you're not going to, it's almost impossible to find the intersection. So
yes, you need
sorry
to
for
build
butchering
a relationship.
That, but it there was something there. All right,
that was
I had
amazing.
Something.
No. I love that. And whatever you read that from was really spot on. You know, I think that a lot of people think, oh, I need to intersect with people right when they're ready to buy an income property.
But that's Coca-Cola, and you can't afford to be that. Right? You can't afford to be everywhere all the time like Coke, right?
No, it's not about omnipresence. We're not Martha Stewart.
But that's
we're not
Coca-Cola,
God.
Right, is what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. But like you can figure out, you know, where you want to be. So, for example, I work with some commercial real estate guys on the Cape in Massachusetts. OK, working with them for like 10 years or so. And we're taking a look at their marketing. They've made millions of dollars over the years in their relationship with us. So they're big fans of ours and we're big fans of them. And what we're doing now is we're really drilling down into who the market segments are within their business. And they've got six different avatars. And what we're taking a look at is one particular customer vertical where there's two avatars within that. The customer vertical is the residential design build where they're doing like the fancy backyard landscape stuff with the pools and the waterfalls and all the fancy stuff. But there's two avatars for that. There's the younger 40-something-year-old woman, and there's the older 60-plus woman. You would think that they have similar things in common, but they don't. The avatar that is younger is looking for a sense of external validation. She's looking for something where she feels better about herself, better about, see, I have nice things, I'm valuable, right? She probably lost herself quite a bit in motherhood, as a lot of women do, right? And she's looking for a sense of meaning.
This is her sports car.
Pretty. It's totally her sports car. Now, the other avatar, the older woman, is the legacy builder. She's looking for a place to watch her grandkids play on the lawn. She's looking to create spaces to house memories.
She wants a water slide.
Yeah, she's probably less concerned with it being absolutely stunningly like Martha Stewart and more like, I want memories made here and I want my kids to come visit me because I miss them.
She's
right?
Trying
so
to create
those
a playground and reel in the grandkids.
Yeah. Right. But like, think about the timing and the intersection. So like looping it back around to the timing and the intersecting, we cannot intersect with these women at the right time. You can't do it. So what you do is you build a relationship, you capitalize on their dreams and you help to encourage the dreams and you give them shiny, glossy pictures of what they could have. And you help them to envision the kids playing on the lawn or the younger woman's friends coming over for a backyard cocktail party with like wines and like tiny little sandwiches and stuff. Like you create the dream and you do that over a period of time through consistent brand building storytelling that makes her feel good. Both of these women need to feel good. Both of these women want the same thing, but they want it for different reasons at different times. So if you understand and create stories over time that they can follow and get excited about, ultimately you will help to bring about the timing, but you will also facilitate them calling you when it's time for them to finally take action, when dreaming is no longer sufficient.
All right, this is what I'm talking about. I'm exhausted now, all right? Too much. It's just too dead. Can we just talk about guns now?
That was a brief version. Sorry. I did ask how much time do you have? I know. So, I mean, listen, we can totally talk about guns and ammo. Pew, pew.
So here's my question. Is the 223 worth it, or should it just be 556 all day and write off the 223?
Well, we're about to get a huge inventory available for purchase of 5.56. So there's my answer.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's just, you just commit, right? Just commit to the 5.56. Don't even mess around with the 2.23. Get the knockdown power that you need, folks. All right.
Hey, I'm here for it. I'm really super excited.
Where can we get some of this 5.56?
So we are having it available at sovereignammo.com. Now, here's the fun thing about Sovereign. A lot of people don't know how to spell it. S-O-V-E-R-E-I-G-N.
The E-I and the I-E's always mess people up. That has been a bane of my existence. So,
well,
give me one more time for the folks that I just screwed up. Sorry.
It's just E-I-G-N. You can spell the Sover part yourself, S-O-V-E-R. It's E-I-G-N. People are like, what? So yeah, we've got, we started, we started a couple of years ago when we first moved to Florida, my husband and I, so he's my business partner. And we were on the struggle bus. Turns out you need a lot of money to prop up an ammo company. You can't get dollars.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I got some of these gray hairs because of this ammo company, but we actually got funded earlier in the year. Never did that before. So that's another thing. Hey, how do you get funded? Okay, no problem. I can help with that too now. If you knew what I went through for 10 months to try to get money, oh my God, the stress, the sleepless nights. But anyway, we got funded. And then just to focus, get our operations really just, kicking butt and accurate and really good. We only offered 9mm 124 grain FMJ. That's all we offered. And we wanted to build a solid business and have solid structures and lots of great processes and procedures in place to make sure that was perfected before we expanded. So now we're going to be offering the 5.56. Probably it's by the time you publish this episode, it'll be on the website. We've got some dealer relationships, which is really cool. And we're starting to increase our sales numbers every month. They're better than the month before. And we're probably going to be adding 45 ACP next. And then after that, not sure, but maybe 40 Smith & Wesson. We'll see. But, we want to get dazzlingly good at everything we do before we expand. And we're that company. We handwrite thank you notes for every single ammo order. We tuck it in with like stickers and love. And we've got awesome reviews on Trustpilot and on Google. And I'm super proud of that. Like, gives me the warm
fuzzies. I really like the way you've gone too, because the bulk of what I own is exactly what you're selling. And then I have various other things where I have less ammo, but it's like, because it's just cutesy fun stuff for me, right? Like, I want to own a bunch of different stuff, but I think it's smart for most guys to have a stockpile of 9mm 40 and then a lot of 5.56 if that's what they're going to use for a rifle.
Right.
So I like that. And I like the fact that you didn't rush it and get out over your skis and put out dog shit, right? That's not going to be, good product. You get it perfected before you get onto the next one. So I think that's a really smart business strategy.
Thank you. As a skier, I appreciate your metaphor and compliment.
It's not something I came up with. Someone said to me on this podcast years ago.
I have skis in my attic in Florida. Ask me how useful that is.
can you share any about the manufacturing process, or do you care to go there?
I can definitely share with you some details about my insane husband, who is our bullet maestro. So, here's some interesting things that I learned along the way. Not every powder goes with every primer, goes with every casing, goes with every projectile. I had no idea the level
of
science.
Keep the fentanyl out of it. Right?
Yeah. It's not that kind of show. But I really appreciate the level of science that goes into everything. And you should see these like manuals. They're like good, like 2 inches thick. And like, they're these big, big books that have like all this information. And, the thing that I think makes our company different from a performance perspective, it's not just like any old ammo and like whatever parts we can get. We special order very specific components because we want to make sure that it has consistent performance. It burns clean. It has really great tight grouping. It cycles correctly. I never knew how much quality mattered in ammunition until I got into the business. I mean, listen, I'm a recovering Democrat. Okay. Like don't come at me, but like, I was like, you know, didn't want to own a gun. Didn't want to take guns away from people. I just didn't want one. But now that I own several, thanks Amadeo. You know, we're in this business. It's like, oh, it actually matters quite a bit. It increases your, training ability, your ability to get good with your weapon. It helps you to clean your gun less. It helps you to decrease the chances of having something blow up in your hand and get injured. So it helps you with safety, helps you with, you know, caring for these very expensive shiny toys you have. It just blows my mind. And so Amadeo is my business partner, also husband, and just watching him concoct these recipes and like go to the range and like test everything and, you know, do all that stuff. That's really the magic. Honestly, the manufacturing itself and the assembly, yawn, kind of boring. The very fascinating part is all the science of like getting the perfect recipe and testing it and making sure that it performs exactly the way we want. Because I mean, we've got,
there's no good if it's very discerning customers. Get out the magazine, right? Like if it doesn't make it from the magazine out the barrel or gets stuck, like you got nothing, right?
So yeah, bit of a low bar, but like you also want it. You want to have a more consistent experience, and you'll find with lower quality ammunition, you'll find it burns dirty. You have to clean your weapon a lot. It can jam.
People have experienced jams before, and you got this thing for, you know, the time where you really want to use the damn thing when it counts. And if that thing jams on you, like you're the quality of ammo matters is all I'm saying. So,
Now that we all know and agree on that, it really does. And, you know, I think that that was a big differentiator for me. And then, you know, some people will ask, oh, well, you know, how come, you know, your pricing isn't like lowest? I'm not trying to be the lowest. We're trying to be the best. Like the thing is, like those really big companies that we have a lot of respect for, like, you know, like Federal and Winchester, they've been around for a very long time. They own part of the supply chain. We don't. I can't compete in the race to the bottom for pricing. So I'm not going to try. So instead, we compete in the race to the best. So we offer some of the best customer service you'll ever experience anywhere. Like our customers feel the love, and we've got a wonderful community of like hardcore brand evangelists because they feel so loved, as they should, because we genuinely love them and treat them like family. So there's that. But, you know, we also want to create a product that people return to. So every time they go to one of our dealers and they go pick up a can full of our product, they know it's a quality product they don't have to worry about. So, you know, you can take your bucket of range candy with you and go have fun, stick your hand in, and you know you're going to pull out quality, you know? And we're definitely doing things different. Like you're not going to be able to buy our product in 20, 50 count boxes. You can buy it 250, 500, and 1,000, period, full stop. We sell it in a big, sexy, UPS-proof ammo can. Like, we've played hockey with the things. Like, I mean, UPS does, I'm just saying. So we should be able to test them. And, you know, it's just, it's all part of the whole quality experience. The can is quality. The ammo is quality. It's wrapped like quality. It's just everything is, it's the way it should be.
She's not getting the AK-47 wolf ammo to her door as the bullets are falling out through the cardboard, Gina, is what she's saying.
You should see the way the packages are wrapped. It's kind of like, you ever see one of those terrible Christmas presents where like, it's usually the dad wraps it up in like 15 layers of duct tape, then puts another box around it, then that one's covered in duct tape, and then another one's like wrapped in Kevlar?
Listen, nobody taught us how to do this shit, okay? Stop hating. All right, we get the job done. All right, we get the job done.
No hate, that's no shade, brother. Say. No hate.
and before we send this back to Gino, the coaching, where can people get a hold of you for the coaching and you know, the hub for all things that?
Man, I'm doing a lot of different things. So if you want to check out the marketing company, that's vision-advertising.com. If you'd like to get an autographed copy of my book, you can go to thesixhabits.com. That's T-H-E-S-I-X laradebenedetto.habits.com. If you want to learn about my coaching, you can get there at laradebenedetto.com. Good luck to you spelling it. But here we are. That's what really God easy. Gave me. Yeah, right. And then
DI and then roll the rest. Right. There you go.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. And then Sovereign Ammo. We talked about this. EIGN, sovereignammo.com. That's where you got the pew pews.
Pew pew to Gino.
Jake, can I finish this? Can I wrap this thing up, Jake? Is it my turn now?
Dude, I just gave it to you on a silver platter. You're wasting time. All right.
Come on, put a bow on it, man.
Come on, Gino.
Trying to wrap this up because you guys talk about guns, you talk about marketing, you talked about avatars. What I'd like to start is at the age of 19, Laura DiBenedetto basically realized she was unemployable. She couldn't get a job. She had to work for herself. So she started a marketing company, and over the next 25 years has grown that into an ammo company, into a marketing company, into a coaching business, into becoming a best-selling author, into being a TED Talk speaker. What isn't that she doesn't do? That's the cool thing. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun to be on the show, to have you on the show, and just to show the growth that you've had over the last 25 years, even admitting that you're a recovering Democrat. That takes a lot of courage.
I knew Gino was going to say that.
To be on the show and to say that and to highlight exactly why I hate going into a Starbucks. Now I know why I despise going to Starbucks, and it's not the price because it's not in an alignment with my brand. And the last thing I would say is for all of you listening and trying to pick out some knowledge about business, Laura says something really important. When you're starting a business, don't outgrow your infrastructure. If you want to have an amazing business, don't think about the growth. It's always purpose over popularity. Become purposeful, figure out what your purpose is, and don't look at what the Joneses are doing, what their revenue are. You focus on what you're doing and never try to outgrow your infrastructure. Just like multifamily, if you're getting into apartments, don't worry about buying 1,000 apartments. Worry about buying the first one, getting really good at that, and moving on to the second one. Thanks, Laura.
Woo! Thank you.
Start with a quality 9mm and grow from there. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.